Hello and welcome to Worlds Apart. As Friedrich Nietzsche remarked more than a century ago, everything is learned in comparison. With the prospect of a full-scale war between Israel and Iran, the humanitarian disaster in Gaza suddenly seems like a crisis of a second or perhaps even a third order. Is the possibility of an interstate war in the Middle East likely to deflect from the ongoing mass suffering in Gaza? And could that be a deliberate strategy to redirect the global spotlight and the global criticism? To discuss that, I'm now joined by Ofer Kassif, a member of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, representing the left-wing Arab-majority Hadash Tal party. Mr. Kassif, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for being available.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, you've been an outspoken critic of the Israeli offensive on Gaza. You supported the South African motion to pursue this issue legally at the International Court of Justice, which I know led to so far unsuccessful efforts to impeach you. And I want to start by asking you for your personal impressions of what it's like to be a sort of contemporary David against Goliath.
I must say that it's not the easiest thing on earth, you know. There are some, you know, limitations and obstacles that I have to face. But, you know, we have to do so. Because I see my struggle, first and foremost, as a struggle in the name of justice and for justice. And in my view, justice is universal. It has no colors and it has no nations. So my struggle for justice is for Palestinians and Israelis alike. You know, my political rivals, not to say enemies, within the Israeli parliament and the Israeli society at large, try to dehumanize me and to even sometimes criminalize me and, of course, delegitimize me by saying that I am anti-Israel. That I, you know, a self-hatred Jew. This is totally a hogwash, of course. I am committed to justice, and as a consequence, I'm also committed to justice for my people, the Israelis. So my struggle in support of the Palestinian liberation and Palestinian independence is a part of my struggle for justice, but it is also, as I see it, justice for the Israelis, because I think that ending the war and the bloodshed, which may be achieved only by Palestinian liberation, is the interest of the Israeli people as well.
You mentioned your political rivals, and I heard that in previous interviews you described them as the messianic bigots who actually believe that that policy is supposed to bring about the coming of the Messiah, that they are fundamentalists and the mirror image of Hamas. If so, how do you think they understand the Messiah and what values that Messiah is supposed to represent?
First of all, it is true of many of the ministers and parties or factions that are part of this coalition and government. Unfortunately, I think they are far from being the majority in the Israeli public, but unfortunately they are very powerful vis-a-vis Netanyahu especially, and they control the state at the moment. And for them, you know, life of human beings, including the Israeli hostages, let alone the Palestinians, life of human beings, including the Israeli hostages, because of that they tend to neglect them. Even to mock their families, literally and explicitly. It is because they see the blood of people no more than fuel in the wheels of the coming of the Messiah. Now, I do not know how they consider or see the Messiah, but in my view, had God existed, had the Messiah, the Messiah existed, and they would have endorsed such a bloodthirst. So that poses a serious question as to the justice and sanity of such Messiah. And that's what I can say. In my view, our obligation, our moral obligation, whether we believe in God or not, is an obligation, as I said before, to justice and human beings, all human beings. And one that makes a distinction between human beings according to one's gender or nationality or color of the skin, etc. If someone makes such a distinction, that one is a serious risk.
Yes, but at the same time, Mr. Kassif, there are certain sort of obligations before your country's patriotic duties, and I'm in a very difficult situation here ethically, because my country is also at war with its neighbor, although I believe that Russia is conducting its war in a different manner, more restrained manner than Israel, and I would say the comparison of death tolls attests to that. But in any case, it raises the issue of proportional defense and appropriate targeting. How do you understand Israel's right to defend itself, its prerogatives, and its limits?
First of all, I totally agree with you. I think that Israel, as a sovereign state, has the right to defend itself. I also said very clearly 2 days ago that the Iranian attack on Israel was totally illegitimate and unacceptable because it violated the sovereignty and the right to sovereignty and security of Israel. Absolutely. You know, many years ago, thousands of years ago, there was a Caesar called Marcus Aurelius, and he had a very relevant citation. He said, as a human being, I'm a citizen of the world. As Marcus Aurelius, I'm a citizen of Rome. So I can say the same, but those should not come into contradiction. There's no inherent contradiction in terms between being a patriot and a universalist, or if you like, internationalist. That's why I said before that for me, fighting for justice is a universal inclination, which of course incorporates into the very phrase or the very concept of justice, the interest of the Israelis. What I've been doing is out of my double commitment, which is one, the commitment to the Israeli public, which I am committed to, stems and comes to terms with my commitment to universal justice. There's no contradiction.
You mentioned the latest Iranian strikes as violating Israeli sovereignty and unprecedented in scope, but I would also add that they came as a reprisal for an earlier Israeli attack on the Iranian diplomatic facility, which was also a very notable violation and breach of international norms. Why do you think the Netanyahu government what do you think the Netanyahu government was trying to say with that initial strike, and what do you think they were trying to achieve with that?
Well, first of all, I totally agree with you. And what I said, you know, what I wrote in what I tweeted after the strike on Israel by Iran is that the only way to achieve peace and stop the bloodshed is by recognizing the sovereignty of all states and nations in the region. So, and I explicitly expressed my reservation, to say the least, of the violation of the sovereignty of Syria, Lebanon, and Iran by Israel. Of course, I'm not an hypocrite, you know, hypocritical. So I think the only way to stop the bloodshed is by recognizing and respecting the sovereignty of all nations around. By the way, that should include recognition of the Palestinian right to sovereignty. That means ending the occupation and establishing an independent Palestinian state alongside the state of Israel. Those are the only ways to achieve peace and security for all around the globe, not only in the region. Now, as to your question regarding Netanyahu, unfortunately, this fascist, full-fledged fascist government of Netanyahu's is not following, or it does not care and is not acting upon the interest of the people in Israel, but upon the interest, the narrow interest of Netanyahu and the bigots around him. And that's the only thing that drives them. That's why I continuously have been saying that the interest of the Israelis is to get rid of this terrible government that is the main enemy of the Israelis, before we are talking about anyone else.
But Mr. Kassif, let's try to stick with the latest attack and the logic of the Netanyahu that I'm trying to understand. The reason I'm so drawn to it is because up until the recent week, the world's attention was on what's going on in Gaza. But with this latest skirmish between Israel and Iran, that no longer seems like a number one priority. I wonder if you have any concerns that with this latest scare, by rekindling this old animosity in a new way, that the Netanyahu government is actually trying to manipulate global attention and perhaps deflect from what still is going on in Gaza.
First, unfortunately, the ongoing massacre in Gaza, the terrible destruction and death toll of children, of women, etc., in Gaza, did not very interest the international community. The fact is that it continues for 6 months. If the international community, especially the United States and the European Union, were really interested in the well-being of the Palestinians, in the very lives of the Palestinians in Gaza, that terrible assault was over months ago. But unfortunately, it seems they don't really care. They much more care about their own interests. So in that sense, I'm afraid that the Palestinians are the new Jews, because as the Jews for many centuries were the main persecuted ones, butchered, killed, oppressed, and nobody cared, now it seems that the Palestinians occupy the same rubric. They are oppressed, they are killed, and nobody cares. Now, as to your question, there's no doubt that the manipulation that governments, Netanyahu's government wants to pursue, is by diverting the attention, even if it was a minor one, from the ongoing terrible destruction and massacre in Gaza to the situation with Iran. I agree with you. Now, I'm, of course, terrified of a retaliation, so-called, of Israel against Iran, first and foremost because it bears the risk of a regional war and beyond. And that would be a carnage that we haven't experienced for decades. That should be stopped ahead.
Mr. Kassif, we have to take a very short break right now, but we will be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. Worlds Apart with Ofer Kassif, a member of the Israeli Knesset representing Hadash Tal Party. Mr. Kassif, just before the break, you mentioned that the West only cares about its own interests, but it happens to be that the Western interests are once again, or for the first time rather, involved here, because some Western media reported that the Biden administration is involved in a very active diplomacy behind closed doors, trying to make it's clear to the Israelis that they want to avoid any battle that would have to draw the U.S. troops in. And I think personally that it's a typical American attempt of trying to have a cake and eat it too, being involved without being involved or without bearing consequences. Do you think the Americans will succeed this time around? Do they still have the leverage with Netanyahu and his people?
I think they do, but the question, the big question is whether they're really interested in doing so. Look, we just mentioned before the ongoing massacre in Gaza. In the last week, in the last few days especially, since the terrible murder of the Jewish boy in the West Bank, there were and still are pogroms, bloody, deadly pogroms by settlers under the auspices of the occupation forces against innocent Palestinians in the West Bank. I haven't heard anything from the United States or the EU about it. That's perhaps another thing that the government of Israel is interested to hide or to marginalize. Now, I'm saying that because the United States, the Biden himself, was talking for a few months now that Israel should not invade Rafah, that the death toll of innocent Palestinians in Gaza should be radically reduced. But at the same time, he continued sending Israel the very same arms that killed the people he doesn't want to be killed. So I'm saying that because, okay, he was speaking against an attack on Iran. But I don't know what he's doing in practice, because the last few months show that there is a kind of a cognitive dissonance in Mr. Biden's attitude and activity.
Well, I think you're being very generous in describing the state of his mental health as cognitive dissonance.
No, I think it goes far deeper. No, I want to be very clear. I don't want to say anything about his health, his mental health. That's not my intention. I don't know. I wish him good health, of course, like anyone else. That's not what I meant. By a cognitive dissonance, I refer to his activity, not to his mental health or anything else.
Can I ask you about this very timid sharpening of criticism by the Biden administration of the Israeli ally? Because I have an impression that this whole the whole point of this very high-stake game from the Israeli side is an emotional blackmail of the Americans. Don't you dare criticize us publicly or else. But that's just my reading. How do you understand the disposition of the Netanyahu government vis-a-vis the United States and specifically vis-a-vis the Biden administration? Are they playing a game of chicken with Washington? And how do you see this whole relationship or symbiosis, military-political symbiosis, evolving over the next couple of years or perhaps decades?
First of all, the symbiosis exists for many years, for decades. It's not something new. Secondly, you know, everything is happening. I don't know what's going to happen after the elections in the United States. Things may change. What I can say is that at least the manipulation of the maneuvers, the political maneuvers that Netanyahu has been doing in the last few months are a consequence of the pressure that he feels, or the, if you like, existential pressure that he's in between the fascists, the most fanatic racists and fascists within his government, who press Netanyahu, and from within the Likud party as well, by the way, who press Netanyahu all the time to be more violent, to be more aggressive towards the Palestinians and Iran. So that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is at least the rhetoric of President Biden and others who apparently want Israel to not be more aggressive, but to be less aggressive and perhaps even to stop some of the military activities. And this pressure that Netanyahu finds himself in, I think this pressure is the main incentive in Netanyahu's behavior. And in that sense, the behavior is not exactly coherent.
Now, there have been some reports, primarily in American media and American media close to the Biden administration, that the White House has been trying to persuade the Netanyahu government to opt for a quote-unquote a limited response or not to respond at all to the to the Iranian strikes, they portrayed as a victory for Israel because most of the missiles and drones have been intercepted, so there is no need to respond at all. And I want to ask you, what do you think that limited response could be? And does Israel have the military resources at this point of time for a major action, let alone for a prolonged confrontation with Iran?
Well, you know, at the same time that President Biden said what you quoted, he also was quoted, at least in some of the press that I followed in the last couple of days, that he will not say anything if Israel decides to act in one way or another. We face again this kind of a blur or a fuzzy policy by both Netanyahu and Biden. So it's very unclear for me whether the Biden's administration, he really insists in a minor reaction or a no reaction at all. I really don't know. It's very tough for me to understand because there are so many contradictions, not between the different publications, but between the things that Mr. Biden says and does. That's one thing. As to the alternatives that Israel has, it was quoted in different newspapers and channels within Israel, outside of Israel, that there might be, for instance, a cyber reaction rather than a military one. And I really don't know. The only thing I'm sure about is that the best for everyone, for the region as a whole, for the Israelis as part of the region, was if the government of Israel was not going to act at all. That's the real interest. Let's move forward to peace. Stop with the military reactions. You know, Mahatma Gandhi said, eye for an eye will turn everybody blind.
Well, with all due respect, I don't think Mr. Netanyahu reads Mahatma Gandhi, at least at this point of time. And I do want to ask you about this because he's been sort of using this right-wing sentiment growing up in the Israeli society very shrewdly. You described him as a fanatic, but I think he's a very experienced and a very shrewd politician. And do you think he can afford himself politically, legally to sort of not even to de-escalate, but to look neutral and not be, gearing up for more military action?
Well, I think it is there is a possibility. I mean, he can do that. I do not accept that he's a kind of a magician or something like that. I truly believe that he lost it totally in the last few months. Let's not forget that he's responsible in person for the ongoing lot that we as Israelis have been facing. He's responsible for so many failures in all fields you could imagine. In defense, economy, politics, whatever you can think about, he failed. Everything he failed. He failed time after time after time. By the way, vis-a-vis the Iran as well. So he's not a magician. In my view, he's a psychopath and who lost his... he was a so-called instrumental rationale. That is to say that he picked the goals or the ends psychopathically, as it were, but he was rational in choosing the means to achieve his goals. Now he lost that as well.
Mr. Kassif, is it really only about Netanyahu personally or perhaps about a larger phenomenon concerning both Israel and the United States? Because it looks like these countries are massively losing the economic, political, social advantages that they have managed to accumulate over decades and over years. They're, expanding it on some very outlandish and inhumane pursuits. Don't you agree with that?
I totally agree with it. It's not a personal issue of Netanyahu. Just try to answer your question because you asked me about Netanyahu personally. But I totally agree with you. That's not a personal issue. And it's not, we cannot put the all blame on Netanyahu. It's very interesting because today in Haaretz newspaper, there was an article that claimed that Netanyahu is not responsible for the escalation especially as far as the occupation is concerned, but he is a byproduct of the occupation. I totally agree with that. The occupation of 1967 is the seed of the most of the diseases that the Israeli society has been going through, especially in the last few months. And Netanyahu is only one of those diseases. I totally agree with you. And the United States, different administrations, have been supporting the ongoing occupation in practice. Everyone, since the occupation itself, since Lyndon Johnson, up till now, there was not even one president who seriously challenged the occupation. So in that sense, I put much of the blame to the ongoing bloodshed that everybody suffers from, especially the Palestinians, but the Israelis too. I put much of the blame on the different administrations in the United States, absolutely.
Okay, Mr. Kassif, in a few minutes that we have left, I want to ask you an impossible question to answer, but still, how do you see the situation, if not resolving itself, then at least moving in a slightly more peaceful direction?
Yes, of course, the suffering is mainly of the Palestinian people, but let's not forget that more than 1,000 Israelis were butchered by Hamas too on 7th of October, and there are still 133 Israeli hostages dying in the tunnels of Hamas. So what should be done, must be, or should have been done months ago, is to release the hostages. And that means, and I'll be very, very brief, first, the war should be stopped now. The all hostages should be released. Gaza should be rebuilt. And the most important thing, in order to prevent the ongoing bloodshed and another massacre, is to begin with a serious motion towards true peace. And that necessitates Palestinian liberation. The occupation, the siege must be ended. The Palestinian people is entitled to its independence and sovereignty in the territories that Israel occupied in June 1967. We must do it now. That's the only way to save the lives of all people involved: Palestinians, Israelis, Egyptians, Jordanians, and on and beyond. Because if we don't stop it now, I'm afraid that we are on the brink of a catastrophe that will begin in an eruption, in a regional eruption and war, but it may easily escalate towards a world war. We must stop it. It is stoppable, but we do our share as far as we can. We are too weak, but we do need the international community on the peace side. Not on the Israeli-Palestinian side, on peace side.
Mr. Kassif, we have to leave it there. I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for being with us.
I thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you. Let's hope for better days.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.